a little bit about your background, but if you could spend a few minutes and expand upon, you know, kind of your experience in this industry, I think that would help our listening audience to learn more about you.
Sure. I started with Dun & Bradstreet, New York, close to 30 years ago, and spent a lot of time in different disciplines in the commercial information business. I was a credit analyst for a while, product management, and then moved into general management, and but always around the things that help our clients make better decisions.
And so you grew up back east. I think it was Long
Island.
Yeah,
I grew up on Long Island, yep.
And so you're now here in sunny Southern California?
Yeah, I moved out here about 9 months ago. I live in Carlsbad down by down towards San Diego. Very, very nice area.
And so maybe, certainly for those listening here in Southern California, they understand the geography. Possibly for those living in the, you know, here in the U.S., they understand maybe the difference between Long Island weather and Southern California weather in the winter. But as you know, the internet, by virtue of the internet, we have a global reach for those. Mm-hmm. Could you help those in the listening audience who maybe aren't clear on what the difference might be between spending a winter in Long Island and Carlsbad to appreciate what you're experiencing?
You know, it's funny you say that, Rick. I just got back from 2.5 weeks back east last night, and it was very, very cold. The wind chills were down around sub-zero. I got back to California last night, and today I'm enjoying weather that I think is in the low 70s. So that probably tells you all you need to know.
Yes, it's a wonderful thing, isn't it?
It sure is.
Okay, well, let's spend a little bit of time on your area of responsibility within Experian. Could you share with our audience your responsibilities?
Sure. As a vice president of product management and marketing, I manage a product portfolio that covers a lot of different products and services that support the credit function, things like new customer applications, processing, where, you know, brand new customer, we need to learn something about them, so we'll pull a report, get a score from us, and that kind of thing. We also offer services that help monitor businesses on an ongoing basis, and we also offer services that help collect money on delinquent accounts. We also do a number of market studies. As you know, we have a very, very large database of some 27 million businesses all around the U.S., and it allows us to provide some insights and information about the kind of macroeconomic type information about how businesses pay their bills, about any significant trends in terms of their you know, their overall performance. And we're also able to go into our consumer files as well and produce some macro level studies based on that data. And one of the things that we found, obviously, is with small businesses, there's a lot of similarity between how the individual pays their bills and behaves, you know, with their personal credit as they do with their business credit. And we're able to kind of bring those two together and really produce some pretty useful and pretty robust studies that we found that people have really, really appreciated and learned a lot from.
When we were preparing back last year, when we were working with you and Rosalind preparing for this interview, you shared with us some of those reports. And there's actually a specific area on the Experian.com website, right, Dan, that holds a lot of this information?
Yeah, we post our studies to the Experian.com site. We've also got a couple other sites, BusinessCreditFacts.com, which is really geared towards supporting the small business community with resources that describe, you know, how you can manage your credit, how you can view your own business credit report, and that sort of thing. So we've got a couple of areas where, you know, we can you can access those reports. But specifically for small businesses, the BusinessCreditFacts.com site is really a critical resource, we think.
Okay, and you know, I'd like to come back to this a little bit in a couple questions to kind of come back to what you're seeing relative to small business and how the economy's been affecting them. But before we have that conversation, I'd like to ask, in your business experience and all that you've learned in leading organizations, is there a guiding principle that you use to manage your part of Experian today, Dan?
Yeah, I think probably the most important thing that we do here is we spend a lot of time deciding on those handful of things that are going to be really important to our business and help us drive results, and try to focus all our activities towards those three or four key principles. One of the things that I've found over the years is that, you know, you can get yourself distracted with activities that really don't benefit where you're trying to get to, really don't help you drive the results that you're looking for. And what we try to do here is try to recognize those as quickly as possible, those sort of distracting activities, and eliminate them so that we can get ourselves focused back on those things that, you know, through a lot of thought and a lot of analysis have determined are really going to drive our results.
That's critical learning to share with the audience too, because as you're an important part of a much larger organization as well, you know, you've got to make sure that internally your part of the organization is working against your strategic plan and goals, and then also that there's an alignment with that to what the larger organization is trying to get done, don't
Right,
you, Dan?
that's absolutely true. Absolutely true.
Okay. And that can be, interestingly enough, and I speak from personal experience as well, but while that sounds maybe, well, of course you would, obvious to the listening audience, for those of us that have had experience in larger organizations, divisions of them, it's not always, it's easy to fall out of alignment sometimes with the larger organization's goals. Almost if you're focusing too much solely inside your organization, there is that opportunity to lose sight of what the larger organization is trying to accomplish as well. Is that your experience?
Yeah, I would say that's absolutely the case. You really have to be diligent and be mindful of maintaining consistency with the overall objectives of the organization. You know, here at Experian, we really take a strong top-down approach to where the business is going. And as you sort of cascade through the various layers of the organization, you'll see that there's a commonality of direction. So each of us has our own individual objectives that support the next layer up, which supports the next layer up, and really helps us drive towards the results. And those results are strong, and I think that's our ability to adhere to that has been a key contributing factor.
Clearly, no great large organization can achieve those kind of results without having a congruent strategy throughout. So thanks for sharing that with us. You know, our listening audience may be going, okay, well, how does a credit report differ from a consumer credit report? You know, how does a business credit report differ from maybe what some people are more familiar with, which is a consumer credit report? Would you talk about that for a couple minutes, Dan?
Sure. There's a lot of similarities, and as you point out, there are quite a few differences. One of the key differences, obviously, is the content of the reports. Personal credit report will include personal credit relationships, while a commercial credit report will contain the relationships, the credit relationships, and other things that apply to the business. So, for example, how long the business has been credit active, what type of industry they're in, how that business pays their bills, any public record type information, things like any liens filed, judgments, bankruptcies, and that sort of thing. But specific to the business, now I know some of those things are also found on a personal credit report, you know, how you pay your bills and any public record information. But again, a key separator there is that on the personal credit report, it's your own personal credit relationships, and on the business report, it's the business relationships.
And people may be familiar with the scoring model on the consumer side. There's a lot that's been talked about that, especially over the past year or two. Is there a scoring model on the business side?
Yeah, there sure is. There's in our particular case, our IntelliScore Plus, which takes into account business factors or information that we gather, runs through an algorithm just like a consumer scoring model, but it's designed to predict the likelihood of business delinquency. So we, you know, kind of run all that data through the algorithm, and out pops a score, which is then translated into a likelihood that a business will become severely delinquent. So a lot of similarity, but you know, again, the inputs to the model are different, and what it tries to predict are very different.
And as a business owner, and you know, a large segment of our listening audience are business owners and top executives. What if they're wanting to monitor their business's credit history and be proactive on that? How does Experian, how do you interface with that, or what service do you offer for that?
I think you hit on something very, very important, Rick, is that, you know, we have information on businesses of the majority of the listeners. And, you know, obviously we're able to calculate a commercial score on their businesses. And that's really a score that's seen by the outside world. And I think it's real important that businesses understand what's being said about them, obviously, and what their score looks like. And we do offer services that allow companies to monitor their score, to monitor their credit reports, similar to what you would get on the consumer side. And again, we have a site, smartbusinessreports.com, where you can just go there and get your credit report, and you can also monitor that report. So as new information comes in, you'll be able to see that, you know, a new trade payment came in or something like that. And if there's a problem with the report, you know, you certainly should be very diligent in challenging that. If you see information that doesn't look right, you should make sure that we know about it so that we can make the corrections that might be needed. Similarly, if you have a trade supplier, you know, the way we collect information is we get information from trade suppliers, people who have relationships with other businesses, and they'll give us their aging information. So you might look at your report and say, you know, I've got some really good payments that aren't showing up on my report. Well, that's probably because that supplier isn't reporting to us. So you want to try to make sure that supplier does report to us, because then we can put those good payments in our report and play them back to anybody who makes a request of us about your business.
Wow, that's a powerful thank you for that. And that suggestion is going to live on, for at least for me personally, beyond the interview today. And hopefully the people that are listening are catching the point, because, you know, part of what we're going to talk about next is how has the slowing economy / recession affected, you know, small business relative to their credit, et cetera. And here's an opportunity, you know, for the business owner to be doing everything they can with integrity to make sure that accurate data is reflected on those reports that mm-hmm. sort of help them. So that's good insight and something that I want to share beyond the interview today. So thank you. Dan, let's talk about, you know, how has the recession affected small business from what your studies are showing?
And you know, Rick, I think that's a good way to put it, how has, because it seems like we've hit a turning point, or maybe it's a slow turn, but it does appear that we're coming to a turning point. If you take a look, there was an article in the OC Register, I think last week, where they specifically mentioned that there was about $1 billion reduction in small business funding from the banks in 2009. But if you read through the article, there is an indication that there'll be an increased level of financing coming from the banks in 2010. And I think President Obama just signed into law a bill that is going to put another $4.5 billion in the SBA's hands. So it does seem like things are starting to turn for the better, it looks like we may see some more money flowing out there that'll certainly help get the small business economy kickstarted. But up until now, it's been really a downhill slide. We did a study that we released during the summer, where we tracked 300,000 businesses from April of 2007 through April of 2009, and these were businesses that had absolutely no problems prior to April 2007. So they didn't have any slow payments, they didn't have any public record derogatories, things like liens against the business or judgments against the business or bankruptcies or collections or any of that. And we just wanted to see how they performed for that 24-month period from April of 07 to April of 09. And what we found was some pretty dramatic deterioration and consistent deterioration in the behaviors of those businesses. Just quarter over quarter, we took a look at things like the number of new 91-day plus delinquencies, and they increased just on almost a stair-step fashion consistently through each quarter of that 2-year period. And it really kind of an interesting thing. I mean, when you put in perspective the fact that these businesses had no problems whatsoever prior to the downturn. So clearly, even businesses that were doing well were struggling a little bit. But we also took a look at how those businesses that had no problems previously and took a look at how they performed against the overall population of small businesses, including those that had had problems prior to April of 07. And interestingly, they actually performed better than the business population overall. So even as bad as things had gotten for them, they were still better than the overall small business population. So, you know, it was an indication that, you know, things were pretty bad out there. If those that were good before were doing that badly, you know, and they were still, you know, much, much better than the overall population, it really told you that things were a real, real struggle for small business during that period.
And it reinforces the idea that it's kind of a relative scale, right? I mean, you're measuring yourself against a peer group. You can measure yourself against your paying performance as well. But what you're really talking about there is that it's a relative scale for the and the challenges that we saw in 2009, the prior were for those 2 years were quite significant for. Mm-hmm. Small business owners who had challenges relative to managing cash flow is what it sounds like to me, relative to, you know, late pays and slow pays.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I mean, just to run some numbers by you real quickly, those businesses that had no problems whatsoever had about an 11% negative event rate. And a negative event is, you know, collections, slow 90 plus and that sort of thing. But all businesses in all small businesses actually had a negative event rate of 24%. So when you mentioned before about how it's kind of a relative thing, you know, those that had no problems before were at about 11% rate, whereas those, the general population was 24%. So that's a pretty significant number when you have one out of four small businesses experiencing a negative event during that period, you know, a delinquency, a bankruptcy, collection, judgment, lien, that sort of thing.
So here's another learning moment, I believe, because I can only imagine a business owner who was perfect prior to, let's say, April of 2007, and then, unfortunately, during that time, had some negative events in their file. It's helpful. I would think it'd be helpful for them to hear this, Dan, to know that that they how do I say this? That it wasn't. It's something that was experienced on a larger scale than them. And relatively speaking, they are still performing well given the challenges that them and their peer group have faced. Am I making sense?
Yeah, no, you absolutely are, because I think one of the things that seemed to come through during the down period was that small businesses were just kind of all small businesses were sort of getting painted with the same brush and just having that affect how they did business. And our study showed that those that paid their bills well before, who kept their record clean prior to the downturn, were a better credit risk even during the downturn. And I think there's a lot to be said for that. And whether it's because of the strength of their cash flow management or the fact that they were a well-capitalized business, they managed the business smartly. And as a result, should be given credit for that, I think, no pun intended. But but that's exactly what seems to have come out of the study.
Great. That's great insight. Thanks. You know, let's talk for a minute about the tools that creditors use when they're evaluating my business credit.
Mm-hmm.
And help our business owners understand that what you're seeing from your perspective.
Yeah, well, the single most important thing that a creditor will look at is how you're paying other people. That's obviously, you know, they want to enter into a trade relationship with a business, and they want to see how that business pays other trade relationships. So that's obviously very, very key. They want to see if there's been any you know, negative public record activity, certainly. Are there any liens against the business or judgments against the business? Because that speaks to, you know, that speaks to the the strength of the business, obviously. They may look at financial statements. Sometimes they'll request those financial statements from you directly. I know sometimes there's a reluctance to offer up financial information, but it can be very useful to the business owner in building a relationship with that trade supplier. Which brings us to another thing, and that's don't ignore the fact that what you're building is a relationship with that supplier. Much as you try to build a relationship with your customer, you're trying to build a relationship with that supplier. One of the things that we've found during the recent economic period was that businesses, suppliers were very, very interested in maintaining strong relationships with their customers, because, you know, everybody knows that these things run in cycles and all that. And, you know, if you're loyal to me during a time of trouble, I'll be loyal to you when things get better. And that was really a function of the relationship that was being built, you know, and it has to do with the strength of that relationship from a credit perspective.
So there is a certain amount of, we're all in this together, which is interesting, because I don't want to overdrive that point, because at the end of the day, hey, it's all about business. But one of the observations that a guest made on the show last year, and she's a writer for the Orange County Register, was a sense of community that these hard times are sort of instilling in what she was seeing in business owners and top executives. And that's maybe not exactly the same thing, Dan, but to me, I'm sort of hearing a shade of a similar feeling that you know, maybe not it's a silver lining, but maybe it's an opportunity for people to realize who was there for them during their tough times, and when times are good, as they are becoming, you know, you reward that in people, you know, and in companies.
Right, exactly. You know, you mentioned that at the end of the day, it's about the bottom line. You know, the two really aren't mutually exclusive, because, as you just pointed out, you know, if we're working together during difficult times, that will definitely be one of those intangibles that helps hold it together during good times. And let's face it, you know, during the good times is when everybody's going to be making money, and therefore it will help drive bottom line results even more.
Right. So then when the companies are on allocation because they can't produce all that's being demanded, hopefully you'll be able to fight for your more than your fair share of the allocation, because, right, you know, those days weren't that long ago when, you know, in certain industries there were allocations for, you know, scarce raw materials, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. Hey, you know, we opened with saying how good credit practices can help with the liquidity crisis, or challenges at least, that some companies are facing. So what would you say is the most important action or actions a business can take to avoid encountering a credit crunch?
Well, I think there's two key things. One is certainly managing cash flow as effectively as possible. And that really is it's a two-way street on that. One is being able to manage your relationships with your customers and manage those effectively, but at the same time being able to manage your relationships with your suppliers, because, you know, there's opportunities there in terms of how you, and it could be working a relationship to say, you know, if you could give me extended terms during this period, I know I've been paying you 30 days, can you move me to 45 days? And that can help you manage your cash flow as you, you know, work with your clients to get paid by them. And who knows, maybe you work out some sort of extended payment for a particular client who's been good business, and you think it's the right thing to do. So you can really manage that cash flow from both sides. One is how you manage your customers, but also how you you work with your suppliers. But again, it comes down to managing cash flow. And then also, I would say that access to additional funds is absolutely critical, because as well as you might manage your vendor and client relationships, it's not always going to work perfectly. And making sure that you have a line of credit, which has been a little tougher these days, I know, but making sure you have access to money anyway is another key factor.
You know, one of the things as you're explaining that I'm thinking about as well, relative to all of what you've taught us or talked about here today during this interview, Dan, is as opportunities start to come in to companies, there may be the chance for those firms, businesses, small business owners to take on new clients and to grow their business through acquiring new clients. And understanding what you've talked about today relative to maybe what all companies have experienced over the past couple of years relative to their credit worthiness may give them an opportunity to make intelligent decisions about picking up the right kind of clients to add to their customer base moving forward.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's absolutely true. That's absolutely true. There was a there might have been a sense of a looser set of criteria for bringing on new customers a few years ago, and I think people have decided that, you know what, it's you got to pay attention to credit. You've got to really understand how to properly evaluate a business. It's interesting. I was looking at a study a couple days ago on Yahoo, where Robert Half has come out and said that of the top 10 professions that are likely to see the largest salary increases during 2010 in the financial and IT areas, credit was third. And it's because credit is being acknowledged as having very strategic importance. And right along the lines, Rick, of what you just said, is that, you know, there's been a lot of knowledge that's been gained that's really going to help businesses intelligently grow. And it looks like from the Robert Half study that businesses are willing to pay for that and look for the best people to manage their the credit process.
Interesting. Well, that I don't know what number one or number two were, but that speaks well for your industry. And
yeah, there you go.
You know, it's good to be in the industry that's at least third.
There you go. That's right. Third, top ten.
Yeah. Hey, is there anything else about you, Dan, or your organization that I've not asked you about or we've not talked about today that you'd like to say?
Well, just a bad experience, as I think you know. We're one of the largest employers in the Orange County area. You know, as a result, we do have a real interest in the community, and not just here in Orange County, but around the country. And we have a program called Heart of Experian that is a dedicated community involvement program that works with nonprofits, and it's in, just an integral part of our corporate culture here at Experian. And hopefully, you know, as your listeners are out there, they're seeing some evidence of the of Experian in the overall community and the things that, you know, that we're trying to do to kind of help give back, if you will. I think it's kind of important to kind of get a feel that, you know, Experian isn't just a credit report provider, but certainly very very involved in the community overall.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, because that's important, especially as people are looking at the new year. And, you know, it is a time to what we talked about earlier relative to community and a sense of, you know, people looking out for each other that extends beyond business into other areas. And I'm glad to hear about that aspect and Experian as a part of your corporate culture. I know you guys provide a lot of information and you have multiple places for business owners to go to get access to that. Could you just quickly remind our listening audience or retell us what websites would be good places for them to go to find additional information?
Sure. For reports, your credit reports, you would look at smartbusinessreports.com. That's all one word, smartbusinessreports.com. And then resource about how to manage credit and some of the market studies that we talked about before. Businesscreditfacts.com would be another area to go to.
Well, I appreciate you making the time to be with us today on the show, as well as the time that you and Rosalind put into preparing for this interview. I know that you took time away from other business pressing business things to help me get, you know, be prepared for this interview. So
I appreciate it, Rick. Thank you very much.
That.
Well, thank you very much for the time.
And I'd like to offer that possibly later this year we can have you back and sort of get an update. You know, the kind of quality of the reports that your firm is putting out, I would like to get more exposure to our listening audience, because I think it can help them make better, more informed decisions as well.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay. Thanks, Dan.
Okay, Rick.
Have a good day.
You too.
Goodbye. Again, ladies and gentlemen, that was Dan Meter of Experian, and I would strongly urge you to take some time when you have it to view the websites and look at the information and the reports that that they are putting out. They are really, really packed full of quality information, and I think can help you to make, as I said, better, more informed decisions. So what a great way to start the new year with a guest like Dan. And now, another great way to start the new year is our second guest. I'd like to welcome Bob Pittman to the show. I'm excited to have Bob on the show because he's leading a proactive printing solutions firm, as well as on a different side of his business, he's successfully publishing two national newsstand magazines. You know, his pedigree in printing knowledge is unmatched, really, in the industry. And so to have a successful business owner coming in who's not just in a single area of business, but doing multiple lines of revenue and business ventures is really exciting. And so I think, ladies and gentlemen, you're going to enjoy this part of the interview as well. So, Bob, Happy New Year, and welcome to Critical Mass, the radio show.
Hey, thanks so much for having me on.
It's my pleasure. Bob, let's get right to it. So if you could take a few minutes and talk to our audience about your path to the current firm, I would appreciate it.
Yeah, just to kind of make it sort of brief, I haven't had a lot of jobs, but I started at 14 at a printing company in production, and in the last 2 years, I worked my way into sales, being there for 14 straight years. That led me to being recruited by Cap Cities, who owned ABC at the time. At 28, I became one of their presidents of a division, and I ran their print facility. I did that for about 3 years, and then at 31, I chose to go out on my own and open up a brand-new startup company in Huntington Beach. So actually built the building, started from scratch, got the sales from scratch, and in 3 years built it to $26 million, sold it for a huge profit in 1989, and kind of just went into a sales group for about 2-3 years. And about 92, 3 years later, I got recruited back to the original company where I started at 14 to head up their sales. There were two brothers that owned the company and basically needed somebody to come in and take the sales the next step. So in 92, we were doing $38 million. And in 2000, when I quit, I had built it up to $200 million. So I sold my stock there in the year 2000. And opened up this company for my kids. And basically, we have two different companies. We have the print facility. And again, we're strictly a sales and marketing team. We're not the printers themselves. I've been a printer for, 40 years. I know all the facets of it. But, our company is strictly sales and marketing. So my daughter, she's 29. She heads up the print facility with me. And we have about 8 to 10 people that go out and market for exclusive printing companies. We do about maybe $6 million in sales and what we'd call just – it's not brokering because we exclusively sell for certain companies. But strictly publications, we do about 65 different publications. And I think, when you talk about the down economy, what makes it unique is that we see 65 different types of genres and the troubles they're facing and – I think it's hit real estate and banking and automotive industry, by far the most, but we're seeing it across the platform. And then in the second business that we have is the MMA, which is mixed martial arts. I've got a third-degree black belt. I was trained by Hoyce Gracie, and my son, who's 26, was also trained, and so he wanted to fight, and I didn't want him to, so we opened up an MMA business, and that's strictly a marketing and entertainment company. We've got the two national newsstand magazines. We've got the two websites. We've got a tour bus and trailer. And then we also produced in-house a weekly TV show. So that kind of sums up where I've been on that part.
Well, you're an energetic business owner and leader. And, your firm's name is SMP Incorporated. What does SMP stand for?
Yeah, we came up with that strictly. It stands for Sales and Marketing Professionals, and we kind of thought we understand the sales process. We have studied it for 20 years. You know, it is a process. And so we feel that we could sell rubber bands or printing or mixed martial arts or really whatever targets we went after. And that seems to have worked for us real well.
It must be rewarding to be able to be working in businesses with your children.
You know, I think the easiest thing to say is it has its challenges. My daughter is a saint. I mean, she's very professional. And my son, he competes with me. And I think the biggest difference is in printing, I'm the pro, so my daughter listened to me and learned. But in the mixed martial arts, I think my son and I kind of learned at the same time. So he's almost an expert with me, and that causes challenges. Even though I have the business knowledge and the age and maturity, he definitely has the skill of it. So it becomes challenging, but I don't think there's anything more rewarding than to be able to see your kids every day.
Right. And what an interesting sport to have gravitated to. Kind of, you know, it's gone through such rapid growth. I'm sure it's gone through dramatic changes as it's kind of evolved and expanded, and to be in that for some time and to be a part of that community has got to be a pretty exciting world in and of itself. Not that printing isn't, Bob, but I'm just saying.
Yeah, no, I think any time that you have a company that is on the mainframe and the sport itself, right now it's the fastest growing sport in America. And we happen to be in it since 1995, so we didn't just come aboard. We've been at it for a very long time. But I think the other problem as a business owner that I really learned is it also causes the most business failures. There's a lot of people that open up T-shirt companies or product companies or anything to do with the sport. They're not good, well-funded. They don't even have good business plans, and they go under in 6 months. So that's something we see a lot of, is a lot of bad debt. So even though the sport is the fastest growing sport and you think there's all kinds of money to be made in it, there's also a tremendous amount of business failures in it.
That's a great lesson learned. Thank you for that. That is a transferable learning event, right? Because people who maybe aren't in it wouldn't stop to think about that. But someone who's making a living and building a business and making a payroll, you've got to face into that and recognize that there is a risk there. Thank you.
Yeah, I think especially in a brand new one.
Right. And because it pulls people to it, as you're describing it, I'm picturing it. But frankly, Bob, before you said that, I wasn't. So thanks for expanding my thinking a bit. Hey, you know, of all the things that you've learned in the variety of positions you've held and things that you've done and companies that you worked with and started, you know, is there a guiding principle that you use to lead your firm today?
You know, my dad died when I was 9 without insurance, so it put a great strain on my mom. And I think what she taught me and what I live by today is, you know, every day is the first day of your new life. And if you kind of look at it that way, that, you know, if you're not good, if you're not doing good, if you're not making what you think you should be making, hey, tomorrow's a new day, and I kind of live by that thing. There's a lot of people that sit back and say, I work too hard to make any money. You just don't. And so I have always said, you know, you have to identify your solution. What's the steps to achieve it? How do I monitor it? And monitor it frequently. And I think a lot of people, they might identify the solution, they might identify a few steps, but when they're not making it, they'll just blame it on bad luck and, you know, I can't do it, instead of just identifying. And that's probably my biggest thing I've learned, is that you just got to continue to monitor yourself. And a lot of people are afraid to do that.
Yeah, it's I agree. That's very perceptive. Yeah. And, you know, you are a you talk about sales. You are a sales professional. You talk about sales as having a process to it, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that later. And having a sales background myself, I love to have business owners on who have a sense for the, you know, what it takes to to be a professional salesperson. And I know that from our getting to know each other and preparing for the show today that you do a lot of teaching and mentoring of people around, you know, the sales process. And I know you like teaching sales and the process and the philosophy. So can you share with our listening audience of business owners and executives sort of your philosophy on that aspect of running a company, being a president of a firm?
Yeah, I think watching a lot of companies, studying them, and being a part of, you know, many big companies, there's two kinds of presidents. There's a production president, and there's your production president grew up in the business, know the business. They were probably a manufacturer of the business. Maybe they worked on the line or whatever the process was, and they become over-knowledged with the knowledge of the business of how to do it. But the thing they don't have is sometimes the passion. And I think that's a sales president. You have two kinds, a production president and a sales president. And it's that passion. I think when I sum up all, forget the word persistency and, you know, you've got to have good skills as far as determination. You got to be likable because I'm convinced right now in the marketplace that we're in right now, the autonomy of all the new equipment has made all the printers or whatever process we're selling almost equal. But I'm still convinced that people buy from who they like. That's the first thing is you got to be likable. And I don't think a lot of people work on that. I think especially production presidents are a little rigid. They're not very much out there. They're not really happy. I mean, a lot of it's tied to production. But, you know, probably being likable is probably the first thing is to work on being likable because people like to buy who they like. And if the price is too high or the schedule's wrong or you can't do this, they'll tell you if they like you. And so I find that to be probably the number one trait to work on.
Well, that's good insight because I agree with you completely that it sort of goes back to how to win friends and influence people, right? I mean, it can get lost, especially what I find if people become successful and somewhat self-important, a bit of that humbleness that it takes to be likable, in my opinion, can get lost from their personality. And that is especially as the president and the owner of a company, can be a very serious flaw that may not be detected easily, but is a necessary element to have if you're going to keep taking your business to the next level.
Plus, I think it's so hard to spin the hat. You're talking to a bank or you're talking to somebody that's burning you on payments or the press is late or whatever production you're in. And now all of a sudden you got to spin the hat around and get real happy and excited and bring in the new customer. And there's not a lot of people that can do that. And I think that's probably the trait that you have to work on the hardest is being flexible. You know, and I think sometimes I'm seeing a lot more companies right now where the production presidents are out there in sales right now and a tremendous amount of them.
In your experience, Bob, in working with other presidents, some of whom might be production presidents, can a person take a process and once they realize that this may be in their character, can they be taught?
I used to go to a party and I felt very successful if nobody talked to me. I was about 18. I didn't want to talk to people. I was a martial artist and I don't know if that made me a tough guy, so I didn't want to talk to people. But I did end up going to Dale Carnegie and they put you through a process of trying to be likable and winning friends and influencing people. And I remember there was one guy I couldn't stand. They made me put his name in my pocket, and every time I'd pull out change or whatever, his name would appear. But by the end of the week, I had to ask him to lunch. And I think that's the steps that requires you to change. And a lot of people go to Life Springs, or they go to Dale Carnegie, or they go to Tony Robbins, and it lasts for 30 days, and they're right back to themselves. And I think the ones that separate are the ones that continually keep the name in the pocket or keep whatever the monitoring results that you have to frequently check. Am I doing them? Am I making the right steps? You got to continually do that.
Well, and what a great opportunity. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
I was just going to say it's great to have you on early in January when maybe a lot of our listening audience are reflecting on the things they want to do differently and better in 2010. And this, for some of them, may be an opportunity to focus on doing what you're just talking about.
Yeah, absolutely.
Interesting. You mentioned earlier a little bit about relative to the printing business, and you are seeing some current challenges relative to the advertising aspect of it kind of being put on hold by some of the advertisers. So, and that's understandable given what we've been through over the past year or 2 years. What are you and your firm doing not to let this affect your business at SMP?
I think the mentors that have mentored me over the years, I can think of one named Bob Lena, who was so fantastic. He would always say, there's a recession out there. There's not one in here. And I think if you can teach your employees that, to get off that bandwagon of, hey, it's so horrible and nobody's buying, nobody's doing anything, the world's still going round. I mean, everything's still going on, but you're having to work a little harder. You're gonna have to come up with different ideas and different processes. But, you know, every day we sit down with the team and try to get them to jump into what new ideas can you come up with, and bring them more involved into it. But we just refuse to take the attitude that it's slow. We refuse to take the attitude that people have quit buying. We just haven't given them the right thing to buy yet, or given them the right price or the right value. And I think that's an attitude. If you can just cop that attitude every day, it sure changes your way of thinking.
That is another transferable learning moment, and I want to sit on it just for a second because having, again, been in sales since I was in college and paying for part of my college off my ability to sell newspaper advertising back in those days, but nonetheless, that attitude that you just talked about can't be artificial. It can't be forced upon people. They have to really want to believe that, and it's, in my mind, it is what goes on between your ears is some of the most important actions that you take are the thoughts that you allow yourself to have. Do you agree with what I'm saying?
Absolutely. My mom used to say when she was trying to teach me stuff, she said, no is a definite maybe. And you see it as kids. Can I have an ice cream? No. Why can't I? When can I? What? And you are such a professional salesman at 8 or 9 years old trying to get that ice cream. But the minute you become an adult, you lose it. And a lot of people lose it. You know, we were talking, you and I, earlier about George Foreman. You know, he was a production president, if you want to call his business, and he was the president of it. When he was a boxer, he was mean. People didn't want to interview him. People didn't want to talk with him. He was a mean production president. He didn't have that flair of a nice smile on his face, or, you know, just being likable. But boy, the minute he became a minister and he started selling those grills, he is the funniest, happiest, jolliest guy you've ever seen, that you and I want to talk to him. You know, we want to do business with him. He's likable. And I think you see that in a lot of business things, that, you know, some people can adapt to that change, and some, they say they're going to do it, but they don't make the steps. And I think that's the biggest thing I keep learning and maybe keep getting back to, is you have to monitor the steps. You got to monitor results. If they're not working, you got to change them. And a lot of people, you know, say they want to do it, but they don't.
And earlier, you said something that I think is really powerful as well. You said, if people aren't buying, it's because we haven't created enough value. Taking on the personal, my experience is successful salespeople, and I'm sort of biased, frankly, I'll admit it, towards successful salespeople, because what I find the qualities of a successful salesperson are really admirable. They are people that want to help other people. And taking that personal responsibility for saying, I haven't been able to create, to explain enough about the value or find a way to show you that there's value in this to cause you to want to spend your money with me, it's not your fault, it's my fault, is a really powerful thought.
I had a customer tell me that they're not doing anything to April. And I said, well, is the world shutting down? I mean, what's going on? You're about the third guy that's told me that. And I said, you know, it's like back in the post-Depression era, they talked about Post and Kellogg's. Post decided not to do any advertising or marketing, and Kellogg said, now's the time to get the, you know, to be the leaderboard. And obviously they're the top, and Post has never been able to gain that back. And so I said to this guy, well, now's the time to get out there. Your advertisers are slowing down. Your competitor. And it's funny, I sold him a $25,000 package when he said clearly he wasn't going to do anything till April. So I think it's, again, it falls with you that you know's just a definite maybe. I just haven't showed you the value yet.
Interesting. And I hope that some of our business owners that are listening to the show today who are uncomfortable with the idea of being a salesperson can sort of catch your enthusiasm and respect for the profession and realize and begin to maybe see if there are ways that they can move towards that. Because I do, while I don't believe the president of a company should be its sole or best salesperson, at the end of the day, the president of the company, by virtue of their position, and especially if they're the business owner, can be the most convincing salesperson because they have all the resources of the firm at their disposal. Do you see my point, and do you agree with that?
I absolutely do, and I think there's a lot of companies today, and I hate to admit it, that maybe's had to let go their top sales guy or had to cut back, and they find themselves being the only sales guy. And maybe some of them aren't ready for that. Maybe some of them haven't done it in a while. So I still believe that the leader, if you will, if he's the owner or whatever, still needs to set the bar pretty high. And again, it can come from him or her so much better than it can from somebody down the road a little bit. So even though they may not be the only top seller or not even the top seller, they still have to have that passion.
I agree. Well, you know, this time is just flying by here, Bob, and I appreciate the fact that you've taken the time to prepare for this conversation today on Critical Mass, the radio show. I appreciate the time you're giving here to our audience today to share your insights. And if someone wants to either get in touch with you or learn more about your businesses, how would you suggest they do that?
Yeah, just go to smpprinting.com, sammarypaulprinting.com.
Well, I wish you continued success in your multiple lines of business. I found it fascinating when I was out visiting you and meeting your organization, your people. I wish you the best of luck in 2010. And again, I'd like to offer, you know, let's stay in conversation and possibly later on this year we can get back together and talk about what's happening in your industry and for your firm, okay?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on.
Okay, Bob. Take care.
All right. See you later.
Goodbye. That was Bob Pittman. He is president of SMP Incorporated and an interesting business owner with a variety of experiences and someone who I think business owners could definitely learn from relative to his outlook on how to continue to move an organization in a positive direction. So, you know, wow, this hour certainly flew by, at least for me, ladies and gentlemen in the listening audience. I really enjoyed being back on the radio here on octalkradio.net, the powerful voice here in Orange County, California. To businesses, and the show in 2010 promises to have such a variety of thought leaders and business owners and executives that I strongly encourage you to not only listen on a regular basis, but to tell other people about it who are like-minded, who could learn from the experiences of other top executives here in the county. We have a slate of exciting guests lined up for this year. Every week's just going to be chock full of great knowledge and transferable learning events. So don't miss an episode. If you have to catch it on MP3, you can go to octalkradio.net radio website and get it. You can go to ours. You can go to Apple iTunes, for gosh sakes, and download it as a business podcast off of Apple iTunes. Anyway, my producer's giving me, okay, it's time to go so that the next show will start on time. So all I want to say is I've enjoyed it, and hopefully all of your decisions move your business in a positive direction.
You've been listening to Critical Mass on OC Talk Radio.